friends. I'm Paul Boone on Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host is AJ Scholes, a great follow at AJScholes24. That's AJScholz24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. We take a different look at the league on today's episode of Puckcast. Following the NHL's trade deadline, partner, we have a whole whack of trades to go through. So on today's show, we've agreed that we're going to dispense with looking at each team. We're going to focus on the teams that made the trades and then the impact to their respective rosters on the deals if necessary. And then if time permits, we'll also get into the impact of some recent injuries, particularly on contending teams as we head down the stretch here in the month of March, with 1 month left in regular season, about 20 games left for each team. So things are really shaping up for playoff hunts, and we know who the contenders and pretenders are. So let's dive in, partner. What do you think about all the deals? Any overview? Were you expecting more action, more big names or anything like that before we start talking?
I was surprised there were a handful of teams that kind of sat out. Mostly from the selling standpoint, like the Sabres didn't offload anything. I was a little surprised at a handful of teams kind of sitting out, but in terms of the additions, I mean, I haven't looked at it super recently, but I'm 95% sure that every team in a playoff spot added, at least something. I could be wrong again. I don't have the full team by team breakdown in front of me, but, yeah, that was the only thing, is that a couple of sellers kind of didn't do anything, which was a little surprising. But otherwise, yeah, busy as always.
Yeah, it was. I was watching it. The coverage here is wall to wall, as you can imagine. And a couple of sports networks just dedicate all day to this stuff. And there, for a while there in the morning, it looked like they were going to be busy, but things picked up later and a whole whack of player movement ensued. So we're going to rewind, though, AJ, and go back to March the 16th, when things started to trickle in and some of the names started to move around. We'll go back and forth on this and give our opinions and maybe see where the fits are in terms of the respective players. And so we'll begin with our look at the first trade of note, Florida getting a fourth round pick from the Rangers for Frankie Vatrano. Odd that Florida moved him on the face of it until you realize they had to make room for a couple other big names that came down the pipe. So the impact of Frankie Vatrano on the Rangers, buddy, I think it's going to be a good depth forward addition. He could even play up to second line in the New York circumstance. So bolstering their scoring is what he's all about. And he'll fit right in because this team looks like a well-rounded club, a number of really skilled players out there. And Vatrano is what I call a finisher. He's a guy that likes to get the shots on goal and puts himself in scoring positions. I think he's going to thrive over here.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just add real quick that it looks like Vatrano is actually even going to play with Kreider and Zibanejad tonight. So obviously a good spot for him. Some of that a factor of another player that they added, actually two more forwards that they added. We'll touch on both of those later. I'll take us into the big deal that kind of kicked things off. I know Vatrano was kind of a bigger one, but Ben Chiarot going to Florida for Tyler
Salamek.
Thank you. A first in 2023 and a fourth in 2022. It's a hefty price tag, with the first round pick in there, but overall it's not outrageous. And Florida's going for it this year. And I think this was an early indication of where they're headed. The fact that they're without Aaron Ekblad right now, I think adding a player like Chiarot makes a lot of sense. And then, I mean, how much better do they look when they get him back in the lineup? So I would say their D was solid beforehand. Montreal gets a decent haul here. And I think this was a good one for both sides.
Yeah, this guy's position is a centerman, Smolanik, and he was a guy that the team didn't want to part with in the deal, but in order to get a player of quality, you got to give up something. And so Smolanik, a rangy centerman that will factor into Montreal's plans in the rebuild, they think. And they got a couple of nice draft picks as well. They got a whole whack of draft picks heading into the next few drafts. That's really something that we should touch on later in the summer, probably when we get to the draft previews, AJ, because some teams are stacked in the draft cupboard and others are bereft. And, those are the contending teams right now that have given up a lot of the futures. Up next, we have Kali Yarncroc going to Calgary from Seattle. Seattle offloaded a number of pieces here. They did very well at the trade deadline, if you ask me. They got a whole bunch of draft picks coming their way. Three of them in this deal, as a matter of fact, for a useful player that's going to do nothing but bolster the top nine in Calgary. They've added Toffoli. Now they got Yarncroc, two veterans to the mix, and it was already a pretty nice-looking offense. So Yarncroc, a nice veteran piece to a team that's really going to challenge for the Cup, I think, and go a long way in these playoffs. So we look forward to that aspect for Calgary fans. But Seattle, definitely stocking the cupboard at their end.
For our next trade, and the last on March 17th, another pretty significant one. Brandon Hagel was kind of the focal point of that. He heads to Tampa along with a fourth in 2022, a fourth in 2024. Returning Chicago gets a pair of firsts, one in 2023, one in 2022, and then two players, Boris Tkachuk and Taylor Radish. I was surprised to see Hagel got moved. I didn't think he wasn't really on my radar, partially, you know, he just signed a three-year, $4.5 million deal. He's got two more years left on it. He's an RFA even after that contract. So a young player, just his second full season in the league, 37 points, including 21 goals playing for Chicago this year. So, I was surprised that Chicago was willing to move him. I had seen that they were not planning on it either. They just got an offer that they couldn't refuse. And when you're rebuilding, obviously losing a 23-year-old player isn't ideal, but to get some young players back, maybe not the same level of pedigree as Brandon Hagel, but then a pair of first-round picks, hard to say no to that. Obviously, on the flip side for Tampa Bay, what a huge acquisition here. And I think it's twofold. I think it's obviously for this season. Looks like Hagel's going to take on the second-line role alongside with Stamkos and Killorn. Allows the team to break up Stamkos and Kucherov. They even get to move Cirelli back into a third-line role, making that a much more dangerous line, plus another player in Nick Paul. We'll touch on his acquisition a little bit later. But I thought it was a great move for the Lightning for now and then into the future. I mean, we've talked for a couple of years about their cap problems. Well, Hagel's locked up for 1.5 against the cap for two more years after this season. That's a great contract for a team that wants to stay in it. So it's almost like a slight retool on the fly, if you will, getting a younger player in, but somebody who's also going to help you right now.
Well, I agree. It's a fantastic move for Tampa. They address a need to get one more scorer into their top nine. They got a guy that can play anywhere from the top to the third line now, in addition to the superstars they have in the mix. And Chicago, certainly, they get a couple of first-rounders in return. That seems like a more than fair return for them. But I don't know why this guy was on the trade block, AJ. He's 24 years old. And Chicago's a team that's got a couple of guys at the other end of the spectrum in Taves and Kane that are, you know, I won't say at the end of the line, but, you know, they're $10 million cap hits. So,
I mean, Paul, not to cut you off there, but like I said, they were not, by all counts, they were not planning on trading him. So I wouldn't have called him I wouldn't have said he's on the trade block.
But I was hearing the same rumors as you, AJ, for weeks. Last couple of weeks, I was hearing this guy's name in trade rumors, and I didn't understand it because Chicago's a team that is in a full rebuild, I would say, or should be. And this guy, I would think, would have been a keeper as a top six forward there. I don't know why you give away a guy who's proven it, but to their credit, I guess they did see the opportunity to get two first-round picks, and maybe they hit two home runs at the draft too, but you got one in the bank in Hagel, and I don't know why you go roll the dice when you have a guy who's proved himself this year. That's just my two cents. That may scratch in my head from the Hawks' point of view. Certainly Tampa, though, did very well. We head to the next day. There were three trades on the 19th, AJ, and first one was a bit of a small one, so I'll go through that quickly. Nicholas Deslauriers goes from Anaheim to Minnesota. This is one of those situations where teams are trying to fortify themselves with depth players. Nick Deslauriers fills that role and will bolster his team as they add a little more depth heading into the postseason. It cost them only a third-round pick in 2023, and Anaheim was only too happy to collect that draft pick. I'll slide us into the next big trade, though, AJ, and that was Boston getting Hampus Lindholm and Cody Curran from Anaheim for a first in 22, a second in 23, a second in 24, John Moore and Urho Bakkanainen. I spared you from saying that one. They also retained 50% of Lindholm's salary. This guy goes right to the head of the class in Boston's depth chart alongside Charlie McAvoy on the blue line. He's a big guy with offensive skill. He's not very hard player to play against physically, I don't think. He's slightly built, 195 pounds on that big frame, but he can really handle the puck. He can shoot it, and he's going to be a fixture in their special teams, I'm sure. Probably both of them, in fact. But again, Anaheim did what they needed to do in terms of getting a couple of nice draft pieces and a veteran in Moore, and then a prospect in Buchanan, who had a couple of cups of coffee with the Bruins in the last year and a half. The 50% salary retention, also a key factor in this trade and several others that we're going to talk about later today. Any impressions on this one for you?
I thought it was a great addition for Boston to get a player who's not, you know, there were so many defensemen out there who are going to, you know, potentially break the bank. And not that they didn't give up a lot for Lindholm, but I thought it was a good call by them to go that route and maybe not go after some of the other guys whose price tag were a little higher. Speaking of high price tags, we'll get into that other Florida deal and arguably the biggest trade of the deadline here. And Claude Giroux goes to the Florida Panthers, along with German Rupstaff and Connor Bunneman, a 2024 fifth-round pick. Florida, for their part, gets Owen Tippett, a 2023 third-round pick, and a 2024 first-round pick. I'll be honest with you, I was surprised that Florida was able to get some prospects along with this deal. You know, especially when you consider the Flyers retained half of Giroux's salary. I would have thought maybe not so much in terms of the prospects, but overall for Philadelphia, it's an underwhelming deal, if I'm being totally honest with you. The first round pick's not until 2024. It's also conditional. If it's a top 10 pick, then it slides to 2025. Not that we would expect at this point with everything they've done for the Panthers to be getting a top 10 pick between now and 2024, but weirder things have happened. I thought it was a little bit of an underwhelming return for the Flyers. Not terrible. Owen Tippett will be a nice player for them, but obviously on the Panther side, like to get both Sherrod and Giroux, two of the biggest names out there on the deadline, I think was just fantastic for them. This is already a ridiculously deep forward group, and they're going to go and stick Claude Giroux on the first line. Like, this team's going to be so hard to beat. They're going to have to beat themselves. Like, they're going to have to make some serious mistakes here at some point and beat themselves, because that's such a good team right now.
Yeah, and I, like you, think that Florida made out like bandits here. I like the addition of Connor Bunneman over Owen Tippett on its own. And I've been slagging Owen Tippett for the last year here. And he showed me nothing in Florida with primo opportunities, and he failed miserably. I mean, he's a young guy. Maybe he needs time, but failed miserably in my eyes. And I wouldn't be surprised if German Rupstaff and Connor Bunneman, one of them, emerges as a better player than Tippett when all is said and done. Certainly the draft picks, you hope that for Philadelphia's sake that they hit on one or two of them, and that might make this thing look a little more level. But I think Florida did very, very well on this deal. And they kept it up with the next day when things got rolling on the 20th, AJ, and they added another depth piece on the blue line. Robert Haug is a physical presence they acquired from Buffalo for a sixth-round pick. I think this was a very good pickup. A couple of years ago, Haug was being touted as a centerpiece to young Philadelphia defense, and I think in the right circumstance, this guy can be certainly a quality defensive defenseman. I think there's a little bit of an offensive upside in his game too. So he'll be at worst a third pairing defenseman in Florida, I think, and certainly young enough that he could still move up in that circumstance as well. So I really think this was a nice pickup by the Panthers.
Yeah, I think it's a quality addition for, you know, relatively cheap here, and gives them the kind of depth you need to make a postseason run. Paul, I'm going to shuffle things up just a little bit here, and we'll talk about two of Toronto's trades together, because I do think they should be talked about in conjunction with each other. First off, the Leafs bring in Mark Giordano and Colin Blackwell from Seattle for a good selection of picks. second rounders in both 22 and 23, and then a third rounder in 2024. And then they also got they traded out Travis Dermott for a 2022 third round pick from Winnipeg. So I just felt like they should be kind of mentioned together because they get in one defenseman, send out another, obviously part of that being cap related to make sure they stay under here. And overall, I think the pick up here that is going to most fly under the radar, obviously, is the Colin Blackwell addition here. It seems, you know, when you've got a player like Giordano being traded, it's going to draw all the attention. But I think Blackwell's better than he might get credit for. You look at his 2020-21 season with the Rangers, he had 22 points in 47 games, 17 in 39 for Seattle this year. And I think he can be a factor, not with the number one unit, obviously, but I think he can be a power play guy for them with the second group here. And especially when you consider that Andre Kasha continues to be out of the lineup, you know, you get Kasha back. I think Blackwood probably stays in over maybe, I don't know, Spezza or Kerfoot, one of those guys. So I think it's a good pickup all around. I like the addition of Giordano, obviously. And, you know, you didn't give up much in having to essentially trade Dermott away to be able to fit in Giordano. So for me, the Leafs did a good job here, Paul.
Yeah, I'm glad they got your seal of approval. He certainly got mine, AJ. In adding Giordano, got to look at him. Watched this game for years anyway. And I always mention we graduated from the same high school a few years apart in Toronto. So he's a local
just,
guy.
Just one, 2 years behind you, Paul?
A couple of years, yeah. And I taught him everything he knows. He used to play floor hockey. I'm kidding. No, he obviously knows how to play the game. The guy is a couple of years removed from being the Norris Trophy defenseman, winning defenseman a couple of years ago, and longtime captain with Calgary and captain for the expansion club. So his leadership qualities are there in spades. And so it speaks for his addition speaks for himself. It's going to really add a quality piece to the Leafs blue line. And I agree with you on the assessment of Blackwell. I think this guy is a pest to play against. I remember noticing him when he was with the Rangers, AJ. He just seemed to fly around the ice. And his salary is – he's going to be a UFA at the end of the season, coming off a 725 entry-level cap. And if he sticks around – the Leafs are going to try and keep this guy, I'm pretty sure. And they can probably snag him on an extension to a new deal, something around $1 million, which is a very valuable situation for them if they can pull that off, because you know they've got the likes of Spezza and Simmons, but this guy is already ahead of them, in my opinion, in the depth chart and will threaten, as you say, for a third line role. So I like the move from the Maple Leafs. Certainly Dermott was a guy that I expected to see some development, but it really never came to pass. So, you know, they made some room for the incoming players by getting rid of him, and hopefully he makes good on an opportunity in Vancouver. AJ, up next, we'll talk about another one of these, I'll mention the next two in the same breath because they're very similar deals. Ottawa gets Travis Hamonic from Vancouver for a third round pick in 2022, and LA gets Troy Stetcher from Detroit for a seventh round pick in 2022. I mean, these guys have both been around the league for a few years, and they're veteran guys who play on the defensive side of the puck better than they do on the offensive side. I'll say one thing. I'm surprised Stetcher only cost a seventh-round pick because he has a bit of an offensive upside to his game as well. And in Los Angeles, they're starved for that behind Drew Doughty. So look for him to get an opportunity to be the puck carrier on maybe a third pair there and see if it ignites that offensive skill that I'm talking about. Travis Hamonic, on the other hand, more of a hard rock defenseman, gives a physical presence to the Ottawa blue line. And look, he's a piece that's going to be around there hopefully for a while to be a key part of their blue line as they grow in their rebuild.
I mean, I think personally, and we touched on this the other day when we were on DraftKings there, Paul, I think the Travis Hamonic trade might have been the worst deal that happened at the deadline here. You've got a guy who's making $3 million against the cap, doesn't really produce to that level. He's going to cost it $3 million next year. I know like Ottawa's not really concerned about the cap or haven't been for a while, But Vancouver's trying to dump a contract, and you give up a third-round pick for a guy they're trying to dump? Like, it just seemed like if they had sent Dermott and, like, a second-round pick for the if they had sent Hamonic and a second-round pick for a third-round pick, then maybe it would have made sense. Like, okay, the cost of doing this is, like, upgrading. But you basically gave them cap relief. Well, you paid them to give them cap relief. It didn't make sense to me. I didn't like that deal, and I do think it was possibly the worst deal that went down at the deadline here.
Well, I'm curious to hear what you say about the next one. Go on.
Well, yeah, I mean, this one wasn't great either.
Yeah, but, that's what I'm thinking.
But and more Ottawa. Boy, this trade deadline has circled around Ottawa in one way or another. So the Lightning acquire Nick Paul, while also, some retained salary in there as well. Ottawa gets Matthew Joseph and a 2024 fourth round pick. Look, I like Joseph, and that's why I don't think this is the worst trade ever. I think he's a young prospect who could really get some opportunities to maybe thrive here. You look at his numbers, they're decent with Tampa, 19 points last year, 18 points this year. And let's not forget, this isn't a guy that's getting top six looks. Once in a while, he would due to injury. But if they're healthy, like, Tampa's not putting Matthew Joseph in the top six. He's just – they're too deep for that. With Ottawa, I think he could potentially break into a consistent top six role. And then this looks, pretty good. Again, I mentioned this off the top, though, for Tampa, like, the acquisition. Now you've got Brandon Hagel playing second line. You've got a third line that looks like Nick Paul, Anthony Cirelli, and Ross Colton. Like, that is a scoring line if ever I've seen one in a third line role. So I love it from Tampa's side. I do think Ottawa could have gotten more or should have gotten more. But overall, I think it's better than the other trade they made, because I do like Matthew Joseph as a long-term prospect for the Senators.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment, and I'm glad you pointed out the third-line impact on Tampa, because last year they made some hay with their third line more because it was a physical checking line. But this time around, they add a guy who's 6'3" on the left wing and has a scoring touch. Anthony Cirelli has been as high as a first-line player all season long and played left wing and center. He's going to settle in a third line role at center, it looks like, down the stretch. And Ross Colton was a playoff stud last year. So they've upgraded that third line, if anything. And that really bodes very well for them in the minefield that is the Atlantic Division playoffs. They're armed and they're ready for it after that move, I would say. Dallas getting Scott Wedgwood from Anaheim for a conditional fourth pick. Look, at Dallas goaltending is going to be in flux for a little while, because Braden Holtby has had a bit of an injury-plagued season. Jake Ottinger has been a bit of a discovery. Certainly Ben Bishop has fallen by the wayside. So they had to get a 1B or a number 2. And if they can hang on to Wedgwood, he's a fine backup goalie. And I think that's what they were looking for to solve that issue, which kind of dogged them in the early part of the season. So they figure they wanted to get that settled, and it cost them a fourth-round pick. So good call, I guess. Anaheim, on the other hand, will go fishing for a backup goalie, I think, next year behind John Gibson.
Well, they snagged that other goalie off of waivers, Paul. Maybe they're all set with Sateri that they stole from you.
But, Finland.
I will mention Anaheim's the conditions on that fourth round pick are such that if the Stars qualify for the playoffs this year, it becomes a third round pick. Interestingly enough, Anaheim has three more games against the Dallas Stars. Wonder if they throw the towel in early on those games to try and help the Stars qualify to upgrade that pick. No, I'm,
there's no rumor that that's the future condition, is it?
Yeah, and you have to lose these three games.
Exactly.
I'll take our next two picks together, because they are, like you talked about earlier, they're kind of similar. Yeah. In that Winnipeg reacquires Mason Appleton, who they lost in the expansion draft from Seattle for a 2023 fourth round pick, while Nashville brings in Jeremy Lutzon from Seattle for a 2022 second round pick. So basically, Seattle just trading away guys that are not going to be under contract next year. obviously Winnipeg knows Appleton well. They clearly think highly of him if they went out of their way to go ahead and bring him back into the organization. I think it's a good pickup for them. Nashville, of course, always the home to solid defensemen. Neither of these guys is going to cost a ton against the cap here. And, you know, with news coming out that Dante Fabbro is now considered week to week, the Lutzon pickup looks even better. You know, Borowicki has been dealing with some injuries as well. So it's looking like good pickups for both clubs. And for Seattle, they grab a few more picks, which is all they could really hope for at this point in their you know, expansion franchise.
Yeah, and it bears mentioning Lauzon, obviously a depth piece for Nashville defense. We know that they're a defense factory, so he'll fit right in there. And then Appleton was a prospect in Winnipeg's system, and I'm sure they're very happy to get him back in the fold. A lot of size to his game. He fits the model that Winnipeg has up front, the size and skill, and he's probably very happy to get back in that mix and help them take a shot at a playoff run. Up next, we had an interesting deal when you look at what Arizona's doing. They're acquiring draft picks. They're acquiring top prospects. But this time, they let one go out the door that could be one that bites them in the backside when it's all said and done. Arizona gets the rights to Jack McBain. We don't know what he's going to turn into, but the upside for him is a rangy center, size, speed, skill, offensive punch. But they give him a second-round pick in 2022. It's going to be a high choice too, AJ. So certainly there's more known about McBain than the draft pick. So let's say Arizona is making an informed decision based on what they think McBain can turn out to be. But sometimes those second-rounders do materialize too. So maybe a bit of a high price for a prospect is what I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just add McBain himself was a third-round pick. So they – you know, essentially traded a known third round pick for a, you know, potential second rounder. So they'll see how it works out. Minnesota, for their part, McBain had already told them he wasn't going to sign with them in the offseason. So their rights to him would have expired anyway. Arizona gets the contract done, a 2-year entry level deal. It looks like they might give him some games this year. So that would burn the first year of the deal. So overall, the winner in this trade, Jack McBain. He gets to go to the NHL right away, burns the first year of a 2-year entry level contract. So good on him.
Yeah.
We'll head into the March 21st deadline day moves here. And it starts with the Pittsburgh Penguins making a admittedly at first head scratching acquisition of Nathan Boileau for a conditional 7th round pick. I was a little confused at first, didn't expect the Penguins to go after a defenseman, but the cost was pretty low. Winnipeg only actually receives that pick if the Penguins win 3 playoff series and Boileau plays in at least half of those games. So we have to make the Stanley Cup final mm-hmm. in order to give them the pick. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair trade.
Yeah.
I would take a Stanley Cup final appearance to have to surrender that 7th round pick. As far as the addition of Nathan Boileau, look, he's been dealing with an injury, so that's a factor as well. What I will say is the Penguins have a couple of guys on the blue line who struggle in front of the net. They get outworked and kind of beaten up in front of the net. That is not going to happen to Nathan Boileau. So if he gets into the lineup for them, if he can get healthy here, he could potentially see some games, you know, just because of his more physical presence, 6'2", 200 pounds, he's not going to be moved around easily at all, that's for sure.
And then up next, we have an interesting trade also involving Winnipeg. They get a 4th-round pick in 2022 from Arizona in exchange for Brian Little and Nathan Smith. Now, Brian Little's contract essentially has been on LTIR for the better part of the last 2 seasons. And I don't think that's going to change going forward. So this is a move that will create some cap space on the horizon. And I think that's going to be the value in this particular deal. It costs a 4th-round pick. And they also acquire Nathan Smith in the transaction. So I think it was a good deal for the Jets to get rid of that contract if they worried about paying the thing one way or another, but certainly for Arizona, that creates some extra cap space for this team, and they will be continuing to maneuver acquiring draft picks and offering teams to give up their long-term problems. That's been their math for much of the last few seasons in Arizona.
Yeah, Nathan Smith, for his part, a third-round pick by the Jets at Minnesota State University this year, 49 points in 34 games. So a pretty productive season for him. I would expect he signs it at some point here unless he really wants to go back. But I do believe Minnesota State is involved in the NCAA Frozen Four tournament. So we'll have to see when they get knocked out or if they win the whole thing. He'll probably sign, I would imagine, shortly after that. For Washington, they went back to the well here and brought back Marcus Johansson from Seattle in exchange for Daniel Sprung, a fourth-round pick in 2022 and a sixth-round pick in 2023. I think this was a fantastic move by Washington to go ahead and bring back a player who has had a lot of success with them. Initial looks, he's going to be on the first line with Kuznetsov and Ovechkin. It's possible when TJ Oshie gets healthy that changes up. But for now, that's where he's going to be. And again, I really think this is a great pickup. He was significantly more productive in his 7 years in Washington than he has been on a number of stops since. So I think it's a good fit for him as well. Seattle gets a player in Sprung who's been highly touted, has bounced around a few different places. I'm not overly thrilled with his play, but a few Pittsburgh fans are. a former Penguins draft pick. The haul for Seattle's fine, but I think for Washington, a clear win for them in getting back Johansson.
I agree with you. Sprung has bounced around, and even in Seattle's setup, figures to be nothing but a bottom six piece. So Washington gets a guy who will threaten top 6 minutes. It'll certainly be no worse than a third liner and help their power play. So a nice pickup there for sure. Then we get to Minnesota. And AJ, I got to admit, I was a little surprised by this deal. I know we speak glowingly of Marc-Andre Fleury, but Minnesota had two pretty good goalies in their situation. Kakkonen, who was subsequently traded, and Cam Talbot. They formed a pretty good tandem on a team that's got a pretty good defensive structure as well as an offense that's coming together. I guess they're going for it by adding a piece like Marc-Andre Fleury from the Hawks for a conditional second-round pick. And you can speak to the conditions perhaps if you want, but I think the key notion here is that it set in motion a subsequent deal for Minnesota that they gave up on a top goalie prospect in Kakkonen, and they're all in for this playoff. And in the Western Conference, the thing that gets murky for me is, does any of the other teams think they can challenge Calgary and Colorado? I guess Minnesota's put up their hand, but I don't think they will prevail against either club. And that's really what caused me to scratch my head.
Well, I'll kind of tie it in with that other trade that you mentioned. Kaapo Kähkönen was traded from Minnesota along with a fifth round pick in 2022 for Jacob Middleton, which is a big addition, I think, for the Minnesota blue line. I think that's really going to help them kind of bolster that group that, is solid. Minnesota didn't really have a ton of problems on that blue line to begin with. They have now, though, Jonas Brodin, Matt Dumba, Jared Spurgeon, and Jacob Middleton making up their top four. That's got to be up there as one of the best groups in the league right now. And I'll say, Paul, I kind of agree with you. At first, I was a little surprised that they were willing to do that. But I think Kähkönen didn't do himself any favors in the lead up to the deadline. He dropped six in a row, a 3.87 goals against average there. Cam Talbot can't play every single night. He's shown, other than that one crazy year in Edmonton, he's shown that he recently that's just too much workload for him. So they needed to bring somebody in. Let's not forget, Bill Guerin was a former member of the Penguins, both as a player and the front office during the time that Marc-Andre Fleury was there. So he's obviously very familiar with the Flower. And so bringing him in is good from that standpoint. And from Fleury's standpoint, to be willing to accept that deal, just quick estimate in my head based on where I am and the directions of both places, it's probably about a 6 to 7 hour drive from Chicago to Minneapolis. Not great, but not terrible either. If you hop on a plane, obviously even shorter. So his family is able to stay in Chicago. He doesn't have to uproot everybody without having to be too far away. So I think it makes sense that that he was willing to accept a move there. I like this from San Jose's standpoint to get in a netminder. Netminding's been kind of a problem for them the last several years. They've tried different things, right? This year they brought in Reimer and Hill, and Hill, of course, is injured because he always seems to be injured. Reimer played the way that I think most of us expected, which is why I'm not totally certain that they thought he would get fixed in San Jose. But all that to say, I think it's a good pickup for them. I think it's a good pickup for Minnesota, both in Middleton and Fleury. And Chicago got a pick for, you know, a player that they really didn't give anything up to get in the first place. So I think it works all around.
And AJ, I'm going to take a look at the next three trades in one spell swoop. They were all the same profile as several other ones that we've seen, where a defenseman, a depth defenseman, goes to a team that's in contention for a team from a team that's getting futures or a late round draft pick. First, we have Philadelphia getting a third rounder in 2023 from the Rangers for Justin Brown. I think that's a pretty good haul for a guy who's going to be a third pairing defenseman. A good pickup for Philadelphia. But the Rangers, who have been a very stout defensive team, get another big physical presence on their blue line, and it's a formidable group. And then behind them, they may have the best goalie in hockey right now in Shesterkin, who he's admittedly struggling a little bit, but he's had an outstanding season. Then we have Edmonton getting Brett Kulak from Montreal. The Oilers need a whole bunch of help on the blue line if they want to take a run at things. And this guy also, similar profile to Braun, a big baggage smasher type on the back end. They have a lot of cute players, I'll say, on that blue line who like to pass the puck around, move it around, but nobody in front of their own net to play defense. That's been a big concern. But Kulak will at least put a Band-Aid on that situation. Edmonton giving up on prospect William Lagesson, a second in 2022 and a seventh in 2024. That's a pretty big haul for a guy who will play, I don't think, any higher than a third pairing role in Edmonton. Then Toronto gets some unidentified future considerations from Nashville for Alex Biega. He was an eighth or ninth defenseman in the Leafs system. He'll probably have the same profile in Nashville, and they're hopeful of a long run. And they want to fortify their back end, and figure this guy would help. He's been around the league for a while with previous stops in Vancouver where he showed well. So he's something of a known quantity, but nothing more than insurance on the back end for them.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is that I agree, Paul. I was a little surprised by what Edmonton was willing to give up for Brett Kulak. You know, the Montreal did retain part of his salary. But I mean, the second round pick is really what surprised me here. You know, the players move in is fine, but I was surprised by that second round pick. The next trade, basically a minor league deal, I'll skip over pretty quickly. LA gets Frederick Ellard from Nashville for Braden Burke. Both these guys are minor league players right now. I'd expect them to continue to be minor league players for the rest of the season. Maybe a call up for Burke if Nashville makes the playoffs. Same, you know, Allard could come up for the Kings in a playoff situation. The next deal, Ottawa gets Zach Session and a 2022 fifth round pick in exchange for Josh Brown and a 2022 seventh round pick. I think from the standpoint of Boston, you're kind of just compiling. They've done a little bit of compiling here at the deadline to get, you know, some defensemen in here. They brought in, obviously, we mentioned Lindholm. I'm not totally sure if Brown will crack the lineup on an every night basis. He'll definitely compete alongside like a Connor Clifton, but they also have Mike Riley in there, Derek Forbort. Like, I'm not sure that he factors in heavily. And I think that, you know, what speaks to that is the conditions. Actually, the conditions are on Session, so never mind. But yeah, overall, I think it's a good pickup by Boston to bring in another, you know, defenseman. You basically have an eighth guy heading into the postseason.
Yeah, just one note on Senishin. This guy was one of three consecutive picks the Bruins had in the first round. The only one of note that remains relevant in the NHL is Jake DeBrusk, and he only caught people's attention for a flash this season, but he's back to his old self and in a depth role in Boston's depth chart. But Sinishin was another one of these guys that was supposed to be an impact player and never really materialized. He may be looking forward to a breath of fresh air in Ottawa and another opportunity there. But a former first-round pick is what the Senators get, and they hope that he turns into some value. In St. Louis, they get Nick Leddy and Luke Witkowski, a pair of defensemen from Detroit, for Oscar Sundquist and Jake Walman, and a 22nd-round pick in 2023. Look, Leddy is a very nice skating defenseman. Been around the league for a long time, but he his stock has fallen after some pretty good years in New York Islanders set up. In Detroit, he was more of a placeholder before they got some of their youngsters in the lineup. That's happening now, and so he was deemed expendable. And near the end of his career, Witkowski, more of a depth piece as well. But when you look at it from St. Louis's point of view, they're getting two experienced NHL defensemen in the deal, and so they're willing to part with Oscar Sundquist, who has an offensive upside. I think Detroit's going to like having him in the fold. It's kind of like one of those Robbie Fabry types pickups that nobody really thinks about it for a while until they see the guy get a top six role in Detroit and see what he can do there. And so we'll wait to see if that turns out. In Colorado, they took a key player out of Montreal's lineup in Arturo Lehkonen. This guy was a playoff hero for the Montreal Canadiens last season and a valuable piece in Montreal's setup, I'll say. A bit of a team leader there with all the youngsters that are around, and I was surprised to see them part with him. They got Justin Barron, a second-round pick in 2024, as well as retaining 50% of Lehkonen's salary. I think Colorado gets a gem here in Lehkonen, bolstering an already stout attack, and just gives them more depth up front, a real quality addition, I think, from my perspective.
Well, Paul, I want to circle back real quick on the Leddy deal. Day of, I was not sold on this, kind of the way you described it. Didn't know exactly how he was going to factor in, where they were going to use him. But Torrey Krug is now week to week with an upper body injury that happened on Tuesday. Obviously, they didn't know that going into the acquisition of Leddy, but I think it just speaks to needing him that much more. If you look at the power play minutes after or in that game, rather, with Krug going out, it was actually Nick Leddy among the defensemen who led in power play minutes. So I would expect him to be the you know, top power play guy for them. You know, a bigger acquisition than it first looked like day of. I panned it a little bit. I didn't think he was exactly the fit they needed, but he's going to have to be. If they want to get anywhere here, and Lehkonen, I think, is a great addition for Colorado. He should be in a potentially top six role for them, or give them a third scoring line. Once he's able to join the lineup, he's having a bit of some travel issues there. For a next trade, Washington brought in Johan Larsson from Anaheim for a third round pick in 2023. A nice little depth pickup. I don't think anything crazy, you know, after getting Marcus Johansson, I don't think they needed to go nuts with this. They are getting Larsson after a really long absence. He's been out since January 25th due to core muscle surgery, but he was really productive in the lead up to that, had 10 points in 13 games. If you can get anywhere near that kind of production out of him in a bottom six role, I think he can really help them. Obviously, they're banged up now, but when you get Nick Dowd and TJ Oshie back, it gives them some serious options throughout their lineup, including the addition of Marcus Johansson.
And up next, we got Ottawa getting a fifth-round pick in 2023 from Winnipeg for Zach Sanford. Look, if Winnipeg can retain Sanford, I think this is a real good deal for them. This guy is like Appleton, gives them a little more size, a little more bite up front, and that's what this team seems to be all about. So it's just stacking the deck in that particular area for the Jets, and all it costs them is a fifth-round pick. Of course, if he doesn't re-sign there, then it's a bit of a gamble that didn't really pay off, but not a high price paid there either.
For another addition here, Colorado gets Andrew Cogliano from San Jose for a fifth in 2024. They're obviously pushing that off a ways. I think it's a solid addition here. He'll fit into their fourth line, probably play alongside Darren Helm, which is a pretty pretty nice looking fourth line there. Things will obviously shuffle up with Atari Lekkonen coming back in. If they get Gabriel Landeskog back here for the postseason, that's going to give them even more depth. So they added some nice depth pieces. I'll jump into the next one. It's a little bit of a bigger deal. Winnipeg gets a sixth in 2023, a conditional second in both 22 and 23 from the Rangers for Andrew Kopp. A bit surprised by the overall haul here, if I'm being totally honest. I did not expect a pair of second rounders coming for Kopp, but perhaps they knew something that I didn't about his game. They could obviously, one of the picks could upgrade to a first if the Rangers win two playoff series. That obviously won't happen because they'll be facing my Penguins in the first round of the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, if that does upgrade to a first, it looks even better for Winnipeg here. But overall, you know, getting two second round picks in the same draft, this upcoming one for the Rangers side of it, Kopp is a great addition who should factor into their top six. Right now, they've got him on the second line with Strome and Panarin. I love this forward group way more than I did about a week ago without Vetrano and Kopp here. And another depth player, Tyler Mott, we'll touch on that in a little bit. But overall, I think they did some good work to shore up this forward group and give them some more options.
Up next, Montreal gets Nate Schnarr, who was formerly a third-round draft pick. He's a 6'3", 195-pounder with some scoring upside, so you can see what Montreal's hoping to get out of him. They turn around and they ship Andrew Hammond, who was recently acquired by them, because they were just hanging out a sign. Can anybody play a net here? We're hoping to get some of our regular guys back, but now they did get one guy back, and so Hammond is out the door to New Jersey, and they need every hand that they can get on the back end as well. Take us through the next two, AJ, and then we'll get to the big one that you want to talk about, I'm sure.
Sounds good. Well, I mentioned Tyler Mott. He comes over from Vancouver for a fourth-round pick in 2023. Again, just a good, solid depth, you know, addition. He has just one goal in his last eight games, or one assist, rather, in his last eight games, no goals. So a bit of a slow turn on his game right now, but I think I'd rather have Tyler Mott, who has the potential for offensive upside, than some of their other options they've had at the bottom of this lineup. So a good overall acquisition, I think, for the Rangers. Edmonton brings in Derek Brassard from Philadelphia for a fourth in 2023. From Philadelphia's standpoint, I think this is a good trade. I don't think you're going to get much more out of Derek Brassard. I'm not so sure about it from the Oilers' standpoint here. You know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is back, so you put, you know, potentially put Brassard on that line with RNH, and maybe that's a scoring line, but I haven't been sold on Brassard for a couple of years. You know, 2018, he bounced around a whole bunch. His numbers with the Islanders were okay, 32 points in 66 games. Arizona numbers were underwhelming. His Flyers numbers this year, underwhelming as well. Bit injury prone over the last couple of seasons as well. So I don't love it for Edmonton, if I'm being totally honest.
AJ, that means we get to the last trade before we take a break here, and that involves your Pittsburgh Penguins. They get a signature piece, one of the better players that was moved at the trade deadline, in my opinion. Rickard Rakell goes to, from Anaheim over to Pittsburgh. He should fit into a top six role. I'm sure you're going to confirm that to me when I give you a chance to rebut. But I wonder if you think the price that they paid to get him was somewhat high here. It certainly appears so for me when you think of the names Zach Aston-Reese and Dominic Simon. Those are two players that played in the top nine, and Simone certainly got a look on Crosby's line for a time, too. They give up some good value just with those two prospects alone, but then you throw in Cali Klang, who is a goalie prospect. He's only, I think, not quite 20 years old yet, and I think he's got some tools that might make him a future answer to who's next in Anaheim now, that John Gibson getting a little bit older, and maybe they're grooming this guy to be a factor down the road. Certainly that's the hope. And they also get a second round pick in 2022. So that's four pieces for Rickard Rakell, two of them known entities and one a very solid prospect and a draft pick. I think Anaheim did very, very well in this deal.
Yeah, I mean, I won't say they didn't, but you know, when you kind of think about it a little bit more and gauge what the Penguins actually gave up here, Simone and Asim Reese this year have combined for 5 goals.
Mm-hmm.
So you gave up 2 bottom 6 guys to get a second line winger who's going to play with Malkin. Cale Klang, I agree. I think he's a solid net mining prospect, but Pittsburgh's not really in the net mining market when you consider Tristan Jarry's only 26 years old.
Yeah.
So you got Rickard Rakell for a second round pick. I mean, for all intents and purposes, that's how it worked out. I like the addition here. First 2 games with Pittsburgh, they actually did briefly, try a few things out. They had him playing with Crosby, and it seemed to work a little bit. That would allow Russ to play with Malkin, which I think they're fine with going either way. Right now, looks like when the Lions came out for their most recent game, Rakell was technically listed on the 3rd with Jeff Carter, but then they also had Russ with Malkin and Guentzel with Crosby. So even if that's the case, if it's not a top 6 role, I still really like it, giving them somebody else to play with Jeff Carter and 3 potential scoring lines. So I don't mind it. They had guys like Brian Boyle and Radim Zahorna. Brock McGinn's banged up, so it's not like we needed some additional guys in the bottom, 4th line here. We have definite options with McGinn and Boyle and Zahorna.
AJ, I thought we had one more remaining significant deal of the trade deadline, and we'll wind it up there before we go to break. It was a 3-way deal where Carolina receives Max Domi. They pay a quarter of his salary. It was a big cap hit, and they receive prospect Tyler Ianamoto. Columbus gets Aiden Hreschuk from Florida, while Florida retains 50% of Domi's salary and a 2022 6th-round pick from Columbus, which is actually Toronto's pick, as well as formerly prospect, I know something about this guy too, Yegor Korshkov from Carolina. So a lot of moving parts, but basically at the end of the day, Max Domi winds up in Carolina. And I know the last time we spoke about Domi on this show, AJ, I was talking about the fact that maybe I'd like to see the Leafs pick him up. But then I started to do some homework on this guy. And he doesn't thrive in situations where he's not totally happy. I don't want to say sulks, but he doesn't show as well as I think he could. And he hasn't in a couple of circumstances now in his young professional career. This is a guy who was playing for the London Knights when they were a Memorial Cup threat every year, playing alongside Mitch Marner, and he was holding his own there. So I know he has a lot of offensive skill. I thought he had some feistiness to his game, but what turned me, AJ, is that I look at his stats, and he has only 1 more hit on the season than the guy that does a vanishing act here in Toronto in that category, and that's Willie Nylander. Nylander's a scoring machine, though. He's going to be on pace for 30 goals. You won't say the same thing about Max Domi. So I'm glad the Leafs didn't pick him up. I wonder if there's going to be fireworks in Carolina with Domi and Rod Brind'Amour. And right now, Domi's even not fit to play. He's got a foot injury that he's dealing with. So things are not getting off to a good start for him. And I think he better get his head squared away because Brind'Amour will challenge him. I'm curious to see what you think about all this.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just add real quick. Domi is going to play tonight, so he will be back in the lineup. I agree with your assessment on whether or not he's going to be a fit. I don't know the answer to that. What I did find surprising about this is essentially the Panthers helped facilitate this move. Now, they got something for it. It's not like they didn't. But a little surprised to see them facilitate a move to an in division rival.
Yeah.
Well, no, not in division,
in conference.
Yeah. But somebody who they're going to play. I mean,
yeah.
By all accounts, there's a good chance that Carolina and Florida could meet in an Eastern Conference final. So a little bit surprising that they were willing to step in and help out here. But overall, I think, Columbus probably wins this deal by getting something out of there, and they're not the ones who might have to play Max Domi at the end here. So we got to see what happens. Honestly, I think that to your point, what happens with Domi will determine how we evaluate this.
Exactly. It'll be fun to watch. AJ, we're going to take a bit of a break right now and be back with our look at some of the key injury news and our DFS plays ahead of tonight's schedule on RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. We'll get back to our audience after these messages.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, we're back, but let's have another look and at how people can get in touch with us, AJ. We encourage our listeners to get back to us as often as possible, and you know how to get them to do that. So over to you, pal.
Yeah, absolutely. We always encourage any of our listeners to reach out to us on Twitter. Send your comments and questions about anything that's happening in hockey with your fantasy team, or, you know, other topics that you might want to talk about. Paul knows a little bit about baseball, a little bit about basketball. I can talk soccer if you'd like. We are jacks of all trade on other topics. Of course, if you're looking for the DraftKings show that runs Monday through Friday that we usually are on, you can usually find the link for that on Twitter as well. So we would love to interact with any questions, comments, or concerns. Our friend Danny Negreanu likes to hit me on how bad I am at pronouncing names. I'm sure he'll have some things to say after this show. I'm confident that I botched a number of those. So look out for that on Twitter as well. You can follow me at AJSchultz24, and you can follow Paul at Statsman22.
All right, AJ, and before we get into some injury news, there was one non-deal, I called it, that caused me to think about Dan Negreanu. I wonder what he thinks about the fact that the league voided a late deal where the Vegas club was trying to send Evgeny Dadonov to Anaheim to clear some cap space to create room for some of their guys on the injured list to possibly come back to the lineup. Well, the deal was that he had a 10-team no-trade clause in his contract, and Anaheim was one of those teams, so he had to give his permission to deal with Anaheim. And anyway, the thing didn't get sorted out before the 3 o'clock deadline, so the deal that was announced showing him moving to Anaheim was rescinded by the league because it didn't meet with within the parameters of the trade deadline itself. So a little bit of egg on their face for the management team in Vegas, and now they're hamstrung in terms of trying to figure out how do they get some of their better players off the IR and make them eligible for a last-ditch run at a playoff spot and hopefully a playoff run. But both are in very serious jeopardy right now.
Yeah, I mean, we should talk about the fact that some of this is the Senators' fault. Obviously, you know, you put it on Vegas that they should have maybe done a little more diligence. I think that's a fair assessment. But by all accounts, what happened was Dadonoff, that is, submitted his no trade list on June 30th and submitted that to Ottawa. That was the required date that it needed to be submitted by. It included Anaheim. And then he was traded from Ottawa to Vegas without that no trade clause being disclosed or sent along, or the list rather. I think Ottawa is somewhat to blame for that. Vegas should, you know, take a little bit of heat for not having verified that. And yeah, I mean, the one possibility here that they're going to have to consider, and I'm not a cap expert. I not really sure how they could get Mark Stone off long-term IR right now. They could potentially move Robin Lehner, Riley Smith, and or some combination of Brandon McNabb off injured reserve onto long-term injured reserve, depending on which one of those guys might not be back until when. They certainly could get Alec Martinez back, but there's a potential that they just have to kind of wait until the playoffs, because I just don't see how you're going to make it work with these guys and go from there. But we'll dive into those injuries that you mentioned. And Paul, I'll just lead us into the first one here that we were talking about. Patrice Bergeron of Boston. There was some suggestion that he might be ready to play tonight. Unfortunately, that is not the case. Patrice Bergeron will be out of the lineup here. They are hoping he'll be ready to play on Saturday. And then they'll have Jack Stunica take on the first line role with Marchand and DeBrusque in his stead. So another day that the Boston Bruins will have to wait for Bergeron, but it does sound like his return's around the corner.
And then we get into some of the other moves that we're anticipating. Tuukka Rantanen, we're hoping to see his debut in Colorado, but it's going to be delayed because there are immigration issues at play here for a guy who was playing primarily in Canada, and now he's playing south of the border in Colorado eventually. So that leads to some immigration concerns. A few players are having to deal with that. Some have been rectified, but this one's outstanding, so he'll be delayed in terms of his start. Up next, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins from the Oilers. AJ, he's been missing for the last 3 weeks with a shoulder injury. This has been a up-and-down season for him in terms of staying healthy, but it looks like he's going to be playing today, and that's thanks to your great research that you were able to unearth that just before the show, so thanks for putting that note in. Take us through the next one, though. It's a key one in Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. RNH being back in the lineup, huge for Edmonton. One player that won't be back, at least for now and possibly the remainder of the regular season, is Aaron Ekblad for the Panthers. I do think that factored into their decision to go out and get Ben Chiarot. I think they have all the tools to weather that storm, but obviously that's a big player to be missing there. For L.A., they've got a couple of guys that have been on IR in Brown, Arvidsson, and Athanasiou. Really limiting their forward options, but they are going to get Arvidsson back today. He was off the injured reserve and will play in that lineup. Paul, any thoughts on Ekblad or the absence of Brown and Athanasiou?
Boy, oh boy, there's some concerns in Florida. If he comes back less than 100%, he's the linchpin of their blue line. So that's a huge element to be out without in Florida. And you wonder, they've got a nice little lead in the first place in the division. You wonder if any of the next three were in hot contention for the second spot, Bruins, Leafs, and the Lightning, of course, if any of them can catch the Florida and maybe steal home ice through the first two rounds of the playoffs, that could be a key element. So we'll keep an eye on how Florida navigates the next few weeks, but without Ekblad, it'll be a challenge. And of course, LA, you mentioned three guys on their right wing that have been in the infirmary for a couple of weeks, and they're getting a couple of them back. So that's the great news there. This is a team that I think I give you credit for forecasting that they would be a threat for a playoff spot. I think they're a cinch to get in now, and having these two of these three guys back is going to help in that regard. So good on that. Next up, Dante Favreau of Nashville, out week to week with an upper body injury. That's a tough blow for this blue line. This guy behind their signature piece, Roman Josi, he might be the next most valuable blue liner here, in my opinion. He can play at both ends, has a power play presence as a secondary piece there behind behind Yossi. So he's an important guy that they'll be without. And hopefully they get him back before the playoffs start. But it's dicey right now.
Yeah, we'll dive into a few more here as we continue our run through the injuries. Drake Batherson of Ottawa looks like a good chance for him to play Saturday. They have not confirmed him in for sure, but that ankle injury already cost him 23 games. He had 34 points in 31 games this season, so a really strong start to the year here, and obviously would help, you know, their team down the stretch. But really, we're just talking about helping Ottawa be, you know, not as hard of an out. You know, getting Batherson back is not going to change their playoff standing. In Pittsburgh, it's been Jason Zucker out with a lower body injury. Really just limited to one game here for the Penguins. No real indication of when he will be back. Has been skating, so that's obviously a step in the right direction, but just no clear indication on when he might be available. Obviously that would give them even more options into that top six or top nine, and you know, would be a nice addition for them.
AJ, up next we're going to talk about St. Louis. They're missing a couple of guys at center, experienced hands in Rob Thomas and Tyler Bozak for the last little while, but Thomas seems to be a guy that will be back in the lineup. It's Bozak's injury that will be more of a longer-term situation, so things are looking up, but they'd like to get both guys back in the fold. And I've said it before, this is a team that I'm going to watch because they're getting things squared away up front and on defense, and if Binnington can rediscover his game, he and Huso are a very nice 1-2 punch in the nets, so all hands on deck there pretty soon. Save for Bozak. I'll dive us into the Leafs situation, AJ. There's a whole bunch of news to consider when you think about the fact that this past week, Andre Kasha was hit in the head again. Every time this guy gets hit above the shoulders, I have to hold my breath. And this was another one of those circumstances where he's again in concussion protocol. He's been a very nice addition in Toronto. He's double digits in goal scoring, and it was a low-cost addition that really worked out. They've made a few of them this year here. And so pleasant performance out of him when he's been solid performance out of him when he's been healthy, I'll say, and just hope that he can regain his health as they get into the postseason. Then most recently, Rasmus Sandin suffered a knee injury. I watched every second of the action. I don't know when this happened, but it was late in their second last game, apparently, that it happened. And it's a significant enough injury that's going to keep him out for at least 3 weeks, AJ. So the young defenseman was making great leaps and bounds in terms of maturing his game and being a factor offensively on the second power play. He was driving it, and he was handling things better in his own end. Little problem with the physical play when it gets going, but he's got a lot of offensive skill, and I think he's got a lot going on between the ears. He really knows how to see the ice, and so they'll miss him until he gets healthy. But the key news is the other two guys that are in the infirmary right now. Jack Campbell dealing with a rib injury. He's already missed about six games, and he's skating with the club, working with the goalie coach. They're showing clips on a daily basis like he's the savior who's coming around the corner to solve their goaltending issues. I certainly hope that he comes back as the early season version of himself as opposed to the latter one. That's the key, and it's going to be the key to Leafs' fortunes, I think, as they get into the playoffs against this minefield of opponents. And then Jake Muzzin, the other experienced hand on the back end in the defense, he's had an issue with concussions this all season long and recovering from his most recent one as well. So it's the headshots that have been crippling this team, and you hope that Muzzin and Kasha can come back and just do what they've normally done in their career and be contributors here.
For Vegas, it seems like one step forward, one step back. I'll start with the good news here. Max Pacioretty is a game-time decision tonight, so he could be an option to return to the lineup. They are going to be without a number of guys, including Mark Stone, Riley Smith, Robin Lehner, Alec Martinez, Braden McNabb. Now, they said, looks like, according to the coaches, the first possible back of those guys is Lehner and McNabb are ahead of when Smith and Stone would be back. They didn't offer any details on timing there. And then Alec Martinez is still considered day-to-day. So if you were going to put this into a who's back first, it looks like Martinez, then some combination of McNabb and Lehner, then Smith and Stone. Obviously, that excludes Pacioretty, who's a game time decision tonight. So that's kind of your outlook. There's no clear timeline. It's not clear what that means. Is McNabb and Leonard, 8 weeks, and the other two guys are 10? So they haven't really offered any details there. More bad news coming out of practice this morning is that Laurent Brossois is dealing with an undisclosed injury. Now, he was supposed to start on Thursday last week against the Panthers. They pulled him out. He still did serve as the backup. At the time, he was healthy enough to back up. Now it looks like that's not even the case. He's not going to be in the lineup tonight against Nashville at all, not even going to work as the backup. So Logan Thompson gets another start. Yuri Patera is up from the minors to help shore that up as well. So they went from, just already being on their number two netminder, where now they're looking at their number three. Thompson's numbers to start haven't been terrible, but I don't know how long you want to rely on a guy with less than 10 games of NHL experience. We'll see how many games of experience he has by the time Brossois or Leonard is ready to return.
And AJ, that leads us to the final injury note of any consequence. That's TJ Oshie. His season from hell continues. He's only played in 28 games all year and got about 20 points. So you know he's a capable contributing factor here at both ends of the ice. But offensively, they're going to miss him. That means that Marcus Johansson, the recently acquired former Cap, is back in the lineup, as you implied earlier, to a top-line role alongside Backstrom and Ovechkin. And that certainly should enhance his DFS value play. And what a lovely segue as we approach the DFS part of our show, AJ, and come up with our FanDuel and DraftKings lineups for our picks tonight on this slate of interesting games. I'll throw to you first for what you have in store on the DraftKings side.
Well, look, I'll start by saying I don't know that you can have too many shares of the Florida Panthers tonight. I just don't think you can overdo it when you consider they're playing Montreal. I highlighted this earlier today over on DraftKings, the fact that on the season, Montreal has the lowest goals for of any team in the league and the highest goals against. That's not a recipe for success. I think Florida could use and abuse them tonight. So I'm actually going to get that entire first line into my lineup. Starts with Alexander Barkov, 8,700. Not cheap, but I think worth every penny. He's continued to produce a fantastic matchup. I'll take Claude Giroux, 5,100. Look, could there be some concerns? He just joined the team, blah, blah, blah. Sure. But this is a guy that knows how to produce, and he's playing with a phenomenal talent in Barkov. So I'll get him in there as well. And at this point, Verhaeghe's numbers haven't been phenomenal. He had a good hot streak earlier in the year, had cooled a little bit, but continues to produce and somehow still comes in at 3,900 on DraftKings. In fact, right now he's got 6 points in his last six games. So that's a steal there. So I've got that whole first line in my lineup. My other center, I'm going to just play the odds here, Paul, at this price tag. I mentioned that Jack Studnicka was going to play first line with Brad Marchand and Jake DeBrusque. So 2,500 for him. I know it's up against Tampa. It's not a great matchup, but he's a floor price guy who's playing first line center. Could stumble into a point there. Probably pretty high ownership, I would imagine. So take that for what it is. My other winger is going to be David Perron for St. Louis, 5,900 for him. He's got a 7-game goal streak. Eventually that's going to come to an end, but playing at home against the Flyers, who are going to have Martin Jones in between the pipes tonight, I don't think is exactly an ideal time for that to come up short. So I'd expect him to continue that goal streak going tonight. My utility spot, I'm going to grab just a small share of Minnesota tonight. They are playing at home. Against Vancouver. Vancouver is a much more difficult matchup for them, but Freddie Gaudreau comes in at 3,900. He's anchoring the second line alongside Matthew Boldy and Kevin Fiala. Good spot to pick up a guy at less than 4K. I did make the decision. We talked about this at length on the DraftKings show earlier today. Roman Josi is the most expensive player of any player, goalies included, on the DK slate tonight at 9,200. But this guy has just been freaking unstoppable of late. You look at even just the shots. You know, he's got a 13 game or an 11 game rather point streak going right now. He's got 43 shots over that stretch, so that's almost four a game. That's a really nice floor. He's got just over two blocks a game. Again, another fantastic floor there. 25 points, seven of which have come on the man advantage. I think he's worth 9,200 tonight. It's not cheap, but you got to try it. My other netminder, or defenseman rather, I'm going to go back to St. Louis here. I like the matchup. And I mentioned off the top, it looks like Nick Leddy is going to step in for Torrey Krug on the number one power play unit for the Blues. He comes in at that floor price of 2,500, which again could mean a higher ownership tonight. But again, I think a good spot to have him in and get a share of a guy with some power play minutes, who's, you know, fantasy points per game aren't gonna wow you, but he's in a good spot. Then between the Nets, like for me, this was a no brainer tonight. I know there's a couple other options on the slate, but Spencer Knight's gonna get the start for Florida, 8,300. Just too good of a matchup. You're playing Montreal. They can't score. They don't play defense. So even if Knight gives up one or two, I guess the only concern you could have is Spencer Knight going to face enough shots where if he gives up one or two, is the points worth it? So that would be maybe a fair argument against it. But that's where I'm going to roll with this DraftKings lineup. I'll tweet it out just in case anybody wants a closer look at it.
And AJ, on the FanDuel side, I didn't check with you before we went on the air, but I too agree with you. Montreal is in for a rough ride, and it's going to be the first line of Florida that drives a lot of the scoring. I went with all of them too, and it's kind of interesting to always note the price differential on a player or two. In this case, there's one big difference in price tags. Verhaeghe comes in a lot more expensive for me than you got him. But Barkov comes in at $8,900 to lead me off. This guy's one of the best centers in hockey, one of the best players in hockey, year in, year out, having another outstanding campaign. And apart from Suzuki, I don't know who the Canadians can put on him to kind of slow him down. Maybe Jake Evans is a guy that they're going to put a checking assignment on him, but good luck with that. Florida's power play, too, one of the more dangerous ones. This is the highest scoring team in hockey for a reason. They know how to put the puck in the net, and it starts with their big, rangy center. The other guy that I have at center, it costs a lot less, but I think he has a really nice matchup. We talked about the troubles in Vegas, and Ryan Johansson's had a very nice season, and he's kept it up all year long. Very consistent effort out of him for the first time in years in Nashville, and I'm all over it. He's playing first-line minutes. He costs only $5,200, and this is a mismatch, so I'm happy to get him in as my cheap centerman, I'll say. Then I went to my sidekick theory for the next two players, and they both are on the first line in Edmonton. I didn't want to spend up to get McDavid, but I'm going to get the impact of McDavid by putting both Kyler Yamamoto in and Evander Kane. Yamamoto comes in at $5,000 and Kane at $7,800. You mentioned the goalie issues in San Jose. I think this is a spot where Edmonton can really run up a total, and those guys should be a key part of that as well. Rounding up my forward complement, I did suggest that I was going with the Florida first line. You bet I am. Carter Verhaeghe, listen to this, AJ. You got him for less than $4,000, I think. I'm paying $5,300 to get him in the lineup against Montreal, but there's too much value here in this play, so I'm happy to do it. And then Claude Giroux comes in at $6,100 to round out my forward complement. I had to go cheap on the blue line to make this all happen and fit, but I've got two guys that drive their respective offenses and play some power play minutes in each case, so I'll take them as favorites to win their respective games too. So that should only give them more chances to produce points. I'll go with Neil Pionk of Winnipeg. I really like the look of this team as they head down the stretch. They are starting to play much better hockey, and they're facing an Ottawa club that's playing well, but I think is in over their heads tonight. You get Pionk for $4,300. And for $4,300, you get Philip Hronek of Detroit, who is one of their two offensive defensemen. Moritz Seider is the one that's getting all the notoriety, but Hronek is no slouch in that area, and I think he's going to get a lot of offensive zone starts because that's his game too. He comes in at $4,300. AJ is probably wondering, where the heck is this guy going in goal? Well, I'll tell you. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to get a good view of things here in Minnesota, but I think Cam Talbot is the guy that's going to go in net. Regardless of who plays in net, though, I'm taking the Minnesota goalie at $7,900. I think that they're a very good home ice team. Certainly Vancouver's a good road team, so it's a match of strengths, really. But I'm trusting Minnesota's size and skill to be too much for Vancouver on this night. Vancouver's coming into this game having scoring issues in the last few games, and Minnesota's been able to shut things down defensively as well. So I'm counting on the latter 2 points to give me a goalie win here. So that rounds up our look at the trade deadline and the key injuries. And I think the latter is going to be a concern that we will harp on down the stretch, because we're getting to the short strokes in our fantasy hockey season, long seasons too. And you want to know the shape that the contending teams are in as they head down to the end of the regular season schedule and prepare for the postseason. We won't forget about the also-rans either, because there's some high point totals among some of the scorers on those teams. Witness what Patrick Kane is doing this year as an example. So we'll certainly not forget about them and keep that up. But AJ, all in all, I was pretty satisfied with the trade deadline as it was, and concerned, though, about some of the injury situations that have arisen around the league.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It always seems to happen that you make all these trades and teams look really good, and then all of a sudden something pops up. Made me obviously think of Torey Krug going down. I think that's a pretty big deal for them. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I did want to follow up, Paul. It will be Cam Talbot. He is confirmed to be in the nets for Minnesota tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for that. Okay, friends, that wraps up our look around the league in this episode of Podcast with Statsman and AJ. Thanks for listening to RotoWire's signature fantasy hockey podcast. In the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. And you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen in to Podcast to get our tips to stay out of the competition, your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.